Hello, this is Blaine Freese, and welcome to the Maverick Way Radio Hour. We have Peter Iango. He has returned for a second episode, and so here we are on the eve of South by Southwest. We're actually broadcasting live from lovely Austin, Texas, which usually is lovely, except today it's cold and rainy down here, but I think it's a good way for the city to get ready for stuff. Peter, welcome back to the Maverick Way.
Thanks for having me. So happy to be back.
Awesome. So you are at home in Brooklyn, is that correct?
I am. I am home in Brooklyn.
Awesome. And we're going to give you a little shout out. So this is Peter with Indelible Films. And if you ever want to check out what he's got going on, get a little more information about what he's up to, it's IndelibleFilmsLLC.com. That's IndelibleFilmsLLC.com. And for anybody out there who would like to call in and ask a question of Peter, I believe we might also have Cameron Taddeo come on, who is the editor of the first show that we had discussed on this called C Street. If you want to call in, please feel free to dial in at 646-564-9625. Again, that's 646-564-9625. So, Peter, how's it going, man? Tell me what it's like
Brooklyn. Well, today has been a pretty spectacular day. We're starting to finally get some really nice spring weather. It was a beautiful, sunny spring day, so I'm kind of enjoying the nice weather. I got to be honest, Blaine, although I live in New York, I've never been a huge fan of the winter. so it's really nice to see some of the spring weather come in. But Brooklyn's good. We're keeping busy here, and I think the entertainment industry has been pretty booming. The real estate industry and the entertainment industry have been pretty booming in Brooklyn.
Nice. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Same thing's happening over across the other way in the sixth borough of Jersey City. So things are kind of starting to jam there, too. There's a lot of new art stuff coming up, and we're even talking about doing a monthly special on Jersey City here at the Maverick Way. Just to kind of, because that's where our studio is. That's where Sizzle Studios are. So we've got it going on.
One of the, because I told you on your last show, the part one that we did together, one of my newest features that I produced was actually done in New Jersey, up by you, in Hoboken and Jersey City. So I got to firsthand see last year that Jersey definitely is, becoming another little mini Hollywood.
Well, yeah, what's so interesting about it is, and you'll talk with old New Yorkers that go back. It's like every neighborhood in the city, the artists move in and then the neighborhood and they make everything cool. And then all the other people move in and start to make it too expensive, so they keep having to move. And so, at one time it was the West Village, and then all the artists moved from the West Village over to Brooklyn. Now Brooklyn is getting so expensive that there's actually a really cool resurgence of the arts over in Jersey. And it's pretty exciting for us, because having been there myself for 15 years, it's really, really nice, to see... I got there, we saw the whole market grow and grow and grow, and then, of course, the collapse, which kind of put brakes on things, but it's starting to happen again, so.
Well, that's great. There was recently a piece that I had saw, and it was actually on Channel 11 News, and they did an expose on touching on the fact that a lot of people that grew up in Brooklyn, Brooklynites, if you will, discussing how radical the neighborhoods are changing and the price inflation, the prices are just skyrocketing, and how it's kind of driving people out of Brooklyn people that have been here their whole lives. And believe it or not, a lot of them are actually moving to the city, you know, which obviously, you know, 10, 15 years ago, the city was considered, you know, you're only going there if you were rich, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
So it's interesting. Real estate's changing in the city, that's for sure.
Yes. Well, hey, you know, this is actually a really great opportunity for us to jump into, you know, what is it like to be a small independent filmmaker in Brooklyn? I mean, you really are the heart. You're at the heart of it. You're in the heartbeat of it. But like we were just talking about, the real estate's crazy. The prices are crazy. Even food costs. I come down here and I go to the grocery store and I get really nice food and spend a third here what I do even in Jersey City. So, you know, tell us a little bit about Indelible Films. Tell us what it's like to be a director, producer, filmmaker in Brooklyn, New York.
Sure. I'm born and raised Brooklyn. So let me start there. You know, my family's from Brooklyn, you know, both my mother and father and their family are from Brooklyn. And many of my films, including my current movies that we were talking about, are
this
the last
show. This is C Street, right?
Right, C Street, as well as another current feature film that I produced, Where Hearts Lie, were all 100% developed and shot in Brooklyn. So, and dating back to even, you know, my early days in college, so many of my movies, the nucleus of the story and the setting and where I've produced them has been Brooklyn. You know, so Brooklyn has definitely been, I like to look at Brooklyn as a character in my movies, you know, and Brooklyn has definitely been more of just a location or more of just a setting. It's definitely been a character, you know, in my many different movies. It's brought a lot of, different characteristics and has offered me different things to my projects. I suppose, you know, it's safe to say that it's a huge part of me, you know, so naturally that translates, you know, in my work. But being a filmmaker here, you know, there's a lot of people that acknowledge nowadays that New York is a big, big center for production in general, whether it's, you know, television production, film production, even commercials, you know, and commercial production as well as, advertisement and modeling and things of that nature. So New York is definitely received a lot of attention and certainly is regarded with a lot of respect in the sense that there is a lot going on here, and people in the industry definitely acknowledge it as a center for the entertainment industry. So I don't think it's as black and white as it maybe once was, where it's like, okay, if you're going to be in the entertainment industry and you're going to make movies, you know, you got to be in Hollywood and that's it. You know, it's cut and dry. Either you make it in Hollywood or that's it. But I think Hollywood, which was once a geographical location in Los Angeles, has now become just a terminology where if you make it in Hollywood, you're basically saying you're making it in the entertainment industry versus just being geographically out there. Because take, for instance, C Street. You know, Brett Lewis, who's the writer and the producer of the movie, he lives in Brooklyn. I'm the director and one of the other producers. I live in Brooklyn. Cameron, who's the editor of the movie and was basically in charge of post-production with me of the film, is in Jersey. And then our other main producer, which I told you about last episode, which we couldn't have done this without, Ann Muster, she's in Minnesota. You know, so and she's her filmography is incredible. So, you know, it's you're kind of, you know what I mean? You're kind of, I think that for me living in New York, there is a side of the film industry that I think is different than California. You know, I've been to California, I've done things in California, I've been a part of many film festivals out there. And what I think is California is definitely the Hollywood system, the Hollywood machine, okay, with big budgeted movies and big studios and big players. I think New York is really kind of the real center for independent filmmaking. I don't necessarily know that I would say L.A., Blaine, has as much going on with independent filmmaking, with independent artists, as much as New York does. If let's say California is the Hollywood, is the center of Hollywood itself, big movie studio movies, then I would say New York is the independent capital for independent filmmaking.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, and I think that's really interesting. I see that very much the same way. You had said something a minute ago that I thought was kind of curious, and I kind of have an idea what it means, but, you know, especially people who aren't artists. You had mentioned that Brooklyn shows up in your films as a character. How can a city be a character in a film?
Oh, man. I mean, that's an easy one, and I don't mean to put it that way, but locations, cities, and where we choose as filmmakers to shoot our movies, and more importantly, where writers choose to write their movies, I think is a huge driving force in the film. Take, for instance, the best way I can answer this, take, for instance, Michael Mann. Now, anybody that's listening, you should know who Michael Mann is. But in case you don't, he's a legendary filmmaker. He was the creator and the showrunner for Miami Vice, the famous Miami Vice TV show.
What's a showrunner?
So a showrunner is basically the head writer and head producer of the show. In television, it's a little different than film. In film, we know that it's kind of a director's world, okay? But in TV, it's more the writer's world and the producer's world. And a showrunner is kind of the head of that team, who's really in charge of the creative direction of the show all season long, okay? And Michael Mann served as the writer and also the showrunner, Miami Vice, and his filmography career is legendary. He made Last of the Mohegans, he made the movie Heat, he made Collateral, he made The Insider, which was a multi-Oscar-nominated film with Al Pacino and Russell Crowe. So he's made a lot of incredible movies, Manhunter, Thief, and he is a filmmaker that his locations are very much a character in his different projects. Because take Miami Vice, for instance, Blaine. Would that show have really existed to the capacity that it did if it wasn't in Miami? You know, like, that's my example of location being a character. Because Miami Vice, yes, it's about Sonny Crockett, it's about Tubbs, it's about these two detectives working together, going undercover in various different assignments and the struggles and the tribulations of that. But you can't not acknowledge that the city and the exotic lifestyle that Miami offered at the time in the 80s for different, you know, criminals and drug dealers and the limelight itself that existed and the tropical setting, that wasn't a characteristic in the show. That's what people loved when they watched it. The speedboats, the fancy cars, the beautiful beach settings, the beautiful palm trees, you know what I'm saying? So
the white blazers.
Well, the fashion was driven. See, that's my point. You nailed it.
Right.
The wardrobe.
Right, and there's nowhere else other than Miami that, I mean, when you say Miami Vice, I get this picture of, I believe it's Crockett sitting against a Ferrari or, you know, super expensive sports car wearing his white jacket, you know, and that's what I envision, you know, with the ocean in the background.
And you're absolutely right. He did drive, you know, two different Ferraris throughout the series. And again, the wardrobe was more dictated by the location, because that was a wardrobe that was tropical and work in that location, which is something that necessarily, if the show was based in New York in the 80s, there would have been a completely different vibe. You know, so location definitely is a character in your projects. And for me, Brooklyn has been a part of my movies a lot. And the location, from the wardrobe, the characteristics of my characters, the locations I choose, they definitely influence my decisions and the style of my projects.
So describe Brooklyn as a character.
Well, there's something independent, you know, about Brooklyn, you know, that I like. You know, capturing the brownstones, capturing the old city neighborhoods, you know, that have seen so much over the years, and placing your character in those settings and filming a scene where your character is walking, you know, in this neighborhood that, you know, so many different, you know, great actors and great politicians and great figures in history have kind of walked through and have acknowledged, you know, this is Brooklyn, you know, this is New York. And I believe that that's something that kind of migrates its way into the performance of your actor, you know, and it kind of migrates its way into the celluloid that you captured, you know, the frame that you capture. It gives you this kind of historical and unique feeling to every scene and every frame that you capture in New York. People look at it and, you know, there's this genuine recognition, and there's this like feeling of kind of history, and you know, because you're looking, you know, you look at it and you're like, oh my God, you know, that's for instance is, you know, the promenade, or, you know, that's underneath the Brooklyn Bridge, you know, like think about the things that have gone on there, and, you know, like people respond to that right away, and there's so much history, and, you know, that is responsive. I mean, think about that, Blaine. You're shooting that in your movie, and even though people are watching the scene in your movie, you know, the frame that it's capturing, the setting, that's in their head. You know, that's in their head looking at that scene and seeing that setting. And how could you not think of the rich history that setting encompasses? You know what I mean? For New York. And let's be honest. You know, New York is one of the most recognizable things in pictures and on screen. Right away, somebody's like, oh, man, that's New York, you know?
Yeah.
And I believe Brooklyn's the same way now. I mean, I would dare to say that I think that if you're shooting the right areas of Brooklyn, I think that it's become that identifiable like New York as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, think of an iconic image of New York in my head, that photograph is taken from Brooklyn. You know, you've got the Brooklyn Bridge in the foreground, and then you've got the cityscape across the East River. And yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. It really is an iconic place.
Definitely. So, and, you know, I know I just wanted to add one quick thing. I know you were saying, like, you know, what it means to me in that. And I hope that I answer, because to me, that's what it means. It means that it gives me the opportunity as a filmmaker to enhance my cinematography and capture these beautiful historical areas that I know the audience is going to instantly recognize. And I think that's going to make them think, you know, about where I'm filming. And I want that reaction. I want that characteristic in my movie.
Mm-hmm. So let's get a little specific about it. So let's talk about C Street. You know, it's a political comedy. We talked a little bit about the politics before, and it is set in Brooklyn, correct?
It is. Well, let me kind of explain that. It is actually the movie. The story itself is supposed to be taking place in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
So C Street is a real street in D.C. And this is supposed to be going on in D.C. When we decided to produce the movie, like I said, Brett is from Brooklyn, Brett Lewis, who wrote and produced it, and I'm from Brooklyn. And a lot of the people that I work with, because I do have a team of people, you were talking about my production company, Indelible Films, and we have co-produced and worked with a lot of filmmakers over the last couple of years. And I have a team, you know, that I work with that has gravitated to my company that I freelance and I reach out to when we do stuff, different producers, different, you know, different people of all different levels. So naturally, when we were moving forward to produce C Street, we had all of these people that I was able to reach out to here in New York. Me and Brett are here in New York. It just seemed like it made sense that we would kind of shoot in New York and kind of turn Brooklyn into Washington, D.C.
Gotcha. So what were some of the challenges you had with that?
I'd like to also bring up that The Americans, which is a very popular show on FX.
Uh-huh, I love that show.
They also shoot in Brooklyn for D.C. So,
oh, cool.
Which was kind of, I'm a big fan of the show too, and it was something that I thought about too when we approached C Street. I said, if they could do it, hopefully we could do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But yeah, so, I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Oh, I was just curious about when you're setting that. So how did you create Washington, D.C. and Brooklyn?
Well, that comes down to in pre-production. Pre-production is, you know, the preparatory stage before you start production, which is principal photography. And in pre-production, what that comes down to is really just examining Washington, D.C., the architecture, the neighborhoods, you know, what do the homes look like? What do the blocks look like? And then really analyzing the different blocks and neighborhoods in Brooklyn and finding neighborhoods that match each other, you know, architecture that matches each other, blocks that match each other, and then saying, okay, where is that? And we have to secure something there, and that's where we're going to have to shoot. So what we did was we compiled dozens and dozens of pictures of Georgetown and different areas in Washington, D.C. We looked at dozens of brownstones and different buildings and different blocks, and then we looked at dozens of interiors of the inside of the houses, the inside of the apartments. So we just, like, really absorbed the entire architecture and style there. And then what we did was we said, okay, now we know what's there. Where can we find similar, if not the same, here in Brooklyn? And ultimately, we were able to. We were able to, down in the Park Slope area of Brooklyn, we were able to find a block as well as a brownstone building and apartment that was very, very similar to the style of Washington, D.C. And are you familiar with the terminology a railroad apartment? Do you remember hearing that terminology? Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess for your listeners that don't know, a railroad apartment means that, you know, when you walk in the apartment, it is just a straight shot from beginning to end. You know, the whole apartment looks at each other. There's archways and doorways that are just, you walk one into the next. It's all connected. Like a railroad. Like imagine a train, you just go right through it in a straight shot. And so basically it's just all the rooms are connected. And that's something that we found a lot in the areas that we liked in D.C. So that was something that also helped us. We were like, okay, now we know there's, you know, railroad apartments is a thing. So there's railroad apartments in Brooklyn. So let's find that. So, you know, all of these things that we analyzed and isolated helped us kind of find the appropriate place to shoot the movie.
And so that's always something that I've always been really curious about. And to be perfectly honest, one of the things that has really kept me as a video maker and a short, you know, very short person, you know, short, that is kind of kept me out of, you know, doing something feature length is the whole concept of locations, finding locations and shoot schedules. And I mean, that to me is overwhelming. I know how to produce a play. I know how to produce a live event. That's my thing. But the whole idea of scheduling and shooting and finding locations and organizing all that seems to me to be really, really overwhelming. So,
well, Blaine, let me say you're a really good producer. I mean, I give you a lot of credit. You know, I've seen some of your stuff firsthand, and you know, I know a lot of stuff you do. So you're definitely a very good producer. But obviously, locations is, I think, anything that any one of us could comment is hard. You know, it's one of the harder things, I think, when it comes to producing things.
So how do you do that? Did you hire 4C Street? Did you have like a location person do that? I'm kind of keeping out of the terminology here so you can help us out and kind of, you know,
sure,
let people know who aren't filmmakers. You know, let's get into how you did some of this stuff.
Well, we did hire a location manager, and that...
We lost him. He'll call back. It's the wonder of cell phones here in the world. So, actually, this is a great time to introduce Cameron Taddeo, who we introduced last time and never got him on. So Cameron actually edited C Street. So Cameron, why don't you jump in into the conversation? And I see you're on. Are you muted on your end?
Not anymore.
There we go. All right. So Cameron, now tell us a little bit about, we'll get back to, you know, the location stuff and all of that. But tell us a little about...
Hello?
Hey, there you are. So I've got Cameron on, and, well, Cameron, stay with us, but yeah, let's go back to this, and then what I want to do is kind of talk a little bit more about pre-production, and then since we have Cameron, who did a large amount of the editing of the film, we can talk a little bit about post-production, because that's something, too, that I think takes a heck of a lot more time and energy and effort than a lot of people who see a film might know. So,
absolutely, yeah. Do you want to talk about the location thing, or?
Yeah, let's talk about location, and then we can kind of segue into the editing, because one thing that I know about location schedules is, you know, you've got actors, and you've got actors that you're paying a day rate, and you've got locations that you might be able to only, you know, be at one day, and you might have four scenes at completely different parts of the film. So,
sure.
Yeah, so you've got all these locations. You've hired a location manager. This person goes out, finds location, takes photos, brings them back to you, the production team, and then you make your final decision.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you know, you did a very good job summarizing it. It's true. You know, what happens is that we hire a location manager, and, you know, the location manager is obviously working with us in the sense that we're communicating to him or her, and we hired this girl, Joy Medina, on our film. Joy did a great job. And, you know, after myself and the art team, and we talked about this last time, the art team is the production designer and the art director. So after I worked with the producers, my other producers, Brett and Ann, as well as the art team, which was Jamie and Laura, the art director and the production designer, we figured out exactly what we needed to do to find the appropriate locations for the movie. So then we communicate that with pictures and information to our location manager. She then went out there and she, you know, she went to find it. Now, you know, today we'll scour everything. I mean, you know, there's Airbnb today. Believe it or not, that works for.
What a great idea!
Listen, that works for productions, Airbnb. I just directed a commercial, which Cameron was a part of, for a new app that's coming out, and it's called Yippo, and it's a new photo app, and they got the apartment, the location through Airbnb. So you could do Airbnb. Our location manager, she actually contacted real estate offices in Brooklyn. She talked to real estate people. Believe it or not, some real estate companies, they get called for this stuff. They help out. You know, they have certain clients that are interested in that. The mayor's office of film and television, which I constantly communicate to every filmmaker I've ever met, is one of the greatest resources that the city has to offer. It is a website, and it is an office in New York City that doesn't just offer permits. It has tons of resources from every aspect of what your movie could need. Renting cars, renting equipment, art supplies, everything, soup to nuts. It'll point
really?
You in the right direction. Absolutely. If filmmakers are wondering, how do I find out how I get all of the massive things that I need for every different department, then if you're in New York or in the New York area, you should go to the mayor's office of film and television website, and they have every category, and the category has all the businesses that you can contact to get everything that you need. So it is a huge resource. So that also is a resource, because on there, Blaine, they have a database of people out there. So let's say you own a home, Blaine, and you say to yourself, I want my home to be considered for movies. You can put yourself in the database with pictures of your home, your contact information, and you'll become a part of that. So as a location manager, you can look at that database to see if there's anything there that might fit your production's need. So there's so many resources. So she really scoured the different resources and ultimately discovered an available apartment in Park Slope that was for rental. And we contacted the owner, explained to her what we were doing. She was very excited about it. She was really great to work with. And we worked out a price for the month. We rented it for the month, and that was it. Bing, bang, boom.
Cool.
Yeah.
Congrats. See, if someone were to contact me about that, I would require a cameo appearance.
Well, I mean, listen, if you can, you know, if you take money off the price, why not, right?
Exactly.
You know. But, no, you know, there's a lot of great resources. And, again, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but, Blaine, I don't think we talked about this last time, but real briefly, I was a teacher of film for 2 years. And I taught at a college up in Long Island called Five Towns. And I taught film, I taught directing, I taught producing for 2 years. And I taught my students a lot about producing. And the one thing that I would constantly communicate to them, because they always felt overwhelmed about, oh my God, if I do have a feature, there's so many things. There's art, there's locations, there's props, there's wardrobe, there's makeup, there's all these things we've got to do. And I would say to them, listen, you don't have to just pick these things out of a hat and guess. There's resources like the Mayor's Office of Film and Television, where if you go to the website, everything that you need to find out about and the businesses that you need to get it from are listed there. So for anyone listening to your show, they should know that that's a huge resource to tap into.
Yeah. Actually, I just looked it up here. The Office of Film, Theater, and Broadcasting, you can call them at 212-489-6710. That's 212-489-6710. Or you can find them on Facebook at facebook.com/madeinny. And the Twitter handle is the same, twitter.com/madeinny. So
yeah, no,
awesome
it's,
resource,
I mean, listen,
man.
It is, you know, and they have a program there that we were a part of, which many New York productions are a part of. It's you'll see the icon if you go to their site. It's actually on my Indelible Films Company site as well. It's the Made in New York icon, and it's a program where, you know, if you're shooting your movie or production in New York and you're hiring all New York people and you want to rent and buy and get things from New York companies, then it's a program where you can actually get discounts through other vendors that are part of this program, because it's about keeping everything in New York if you're making a production here. So there's tax incentives, there's vendor discount programs. So it's really a phenomenal resource. I mean, we utilized all of this to C Street, and it was a great resource for us. It really was.
Well, you had mentioned another resource when we were talking the other day for small independent film companies or shooters. It was, I believe, a .org. Do you remember what I'm talking about? It was a membership thing. You said it was a like a $20 or $25 annual membership, and they've got equipment you can rent.
Are you sure that was me?
Yeah, we were talking. It was a nonprofit organization for independent filmmakers.
I honestly can't remember that.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I honestly can't recall. I mean, that's one of the best resources that I've ever been a part of. As far as, you know, the Made in New York program, and we did use that program, and we did use the tax, New York State Film Tax Incentive Program. We used all those programs for C Street, and it was really a huge benefit and resource to our movie. You know, also for anyone that may ever be listening, you know, and is listening to this, if they are struggling with the knowledge of all these things, locations, permits, all these other departments, the mayor's office, the tax program, we offer those producing services at Indelible. So if you go to my website, IndelibleFilmsLLC.com, or you do IndelibleFilmsLLC@gmail.com, you can email us or go to the .com, and we'll be happy to assist you. You know, we you can hire us to help you come in and help you produce any level of production. Because like you said, Blaine, you weren't even sure if you'd be able to direct people to all that stuff. And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that, you know, this is new to them and they don't know all these resources. So, you know, we're always looking to help productions, you know, so people can reach out to us to help them. Hello?
Oops, sorry, I was muted. I've heard that over the last couple of years, the city has really started to crack down on small filmmakers, you know, shooting in the streets and, you know, being out and doing that. And, you know, I'm sure the permitting process is fairly daunting and a little bit frightening, especially if you've never done it before. So what was that? Did you have to do any permitting for C Street, or did you keep most of your locations indoors? How did that work for you?
Well, we definitely did a lot of permitting. We did shoot, I would say, at least 65, if not 75% of the movie indoors. Our locations were in Canarsie, Brooklyn. There is a local newspaper called the Canarsie Courier, and I have a great relationship with them, and we actually shot at the Canarsie Courier. We turned it into the campaign headquarters for the main character, which was Senator Fallon. That was one of our locations. Then we rented the apartment in Park Slope, but we did have exterior locations that we had a permit. One of the biggest ones that we had a permit was at a park, okay, downtown Brooklyn, and it was Fort Greene Park. It's a very famous park in Brooklyn, and there's a monument. There's actually an old war monument in Fort Greene Park. It's in the center of the park. It has kind of these, like, Rocky-style Philadelphia steps. You know those steps Rocky runs up in Philly?
Yeah. Yep.
It has that architecture. It has a series of steps that you walk up, you climb up, and then in the middle is this old war monument. And that was very attractive to me because the movie opens up with a political rally that the senator is giving to a whole applauding crowd of his supporters. And I really wanted to have a nice exterior location for that. So what we did was we grabbed Fort Greene Park, we set up, we put the senator, his wife, and his supporters up on top where the monument is, and we set them up with speakers and a microphone, and then down the steps on the pavement, we lined it all up with extras that were supporters, and we gave them signs and, you know, different artwork to show their support of him. It was a beautiful scene and a great way to open the movie. Now, we had to permit all of that, especially when you're dealing with a park plant. You know, you can't go in there and roll up with 100 extras and your crew and all this stuff and set up in the middle of a park and nobody going to say anything. You know, so, the process is definitely tedious, but I don't think that that should discourage anyone, you know. You have to have, the city mandates that you have to have insurance. You have to have production insurance in order to get a permit. So you have to have production insurance. Once you have the insurance, you're able to submit online. Now they do everything online today. A little fact for you, when I was in college, before they had the online system going, I mean, I'm not that old, but still, before they had the online system really cracking, I went to college out in Riverhead, Dix Hills, Long Island. I'd have to take the Long Island Railroad or drive from Long Island into New York City, and I'd have to go in the office and fill the application out by hand, and they stamped it. Now they do it all online, making it easier. But you fill it out online, you upload your proof of insurance, and you tell them where you need it. Now, when you go to a park, there's a second process to that. Now, let's say, Blaine, we did have a permit for a city street, a sidewalk in a city street. Now, for a sidewalk in a city street, it's pretty simple. You give them your insurance, you tell them the date, the time, and they basically ask you, give us a synopsis of the scene, how many people in total, actors and crew, and what equipment do you have? So you cover all bases, and that's it. Then, when you have to do a park, there's an extra step involved, because now you have to not only get the city to approve it, you have to get the New York Parks Department to approve it. So now, once the city approves it, then you have to get in contact with the Parks Department supervisor that runs that park, and now you have to talk to them about it. You have to tell them, hey, we got this approval, this is the permit we're trying to do, blah, blah, blah. And that's an extra expense. Now the city charges you a couple of $100 to submit all your permits for your production, and that covers all your permits. Then if you go to a park, it's an additional expense to pay for the park and the personnel. So, you know, it's a budgeted expense. It's a lot of paperwork, it's a lot of following up, and it's a budgeted expense. That's the best way. It's not impossible. The city gives out permits. You can get the permit that you need. It just takes time and it takes money.
Yeah, well, that's actually my next question, and this is probably geared more toward people who might want to be doing that work. What kind of time does this take? You start with the city, you file your permit. How long does this take? Is this something that needs to be done months in advance? Is it weeks
Absolutely.
In advance?
Absolutely. No, you need to, I had a professor in college, and I've always thought this way, that said to me that, you know, if you're going to make an independent film, the least you should do is 3 months pre-production, 3 months production, 3 months post-production. You know, and anything less than that is really ambitious and difficult. And that's a good rule of thumb, because these things take time. You know, the city prioritizes its permits because they have a lot of permits coming in. And as you can imagine, they have major studios asking
yeah.
for permits. They have TV shows. They have network TV shows. They have Hollywood studio movies. So, you know, it's a priority system. You know what I mean? You're not going to be the first on the list. You know what I mean? So you have to give yourself time, because it takes time. It's a lot of phone calls. It's a lot of paperwork. It's a lot of following up, and you have to be very persistent, you know, very tedious, very persistent. It'll get done. I'm not here to discourage or scare anybody. Everybody can get permits. The city is wonderful about permits. They encourage shooting in the boroughs mm-hmm. and in New York. They truly do. But You just need to do your job as a producer, and you need to budget yourself enough time to get it done. Be smart about it. You're absolutely right, Blaine. You need time. You need time. You need several months to do all of this. Absolutely.
Cool. Well, you know, we've got Cameron with us, so let's bounce ahead to that post-production three-month period of time. So you've done all your pre-production, you've got permitted, you've found your locations, you've done your shooting. Obviously, scenes get shot out of order, and that's just by virtue of, you know, trying to make a shooting schedule 3 months long as opposed to a year long. And so you've got, obviously, you're shooting everything digitally. You've got terabytes of data, and you bring an editor in. So let's bring our editor in. Cameron, join us. Say hi.
Hi. Hello, I'm here.
Okay, hey, and just so everybody listening knows, Cameron is actually in a car on his way driving down to Texas. Don't know if he's going to make it all the way to South by Southwest, but so if it sounds a little funny, that's what the deal is. Welcome to the Maverick Way. I believe this is the first time we've ever actually had you on, though you are one of the co-producers of the show, and you're always backstage. So I'm going to let you two guys talk.
Yeah.
So,
all right.
Well, Cameron, first, why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, you were about a year out of college at the time. So how did you go about networking, and, you know, how did you find Peter, or how did Peter find you, or how did you find this job?
Oh, well, the first connection I had with Peter was on Casanova with a Woman, which is a feature we worked on, what was it, 2 years ago now? And,
yep.
I was connected to that via my aunt, her name is Stanley Pomisano, who knows Jezebel, the writer and star of Casanova with a Woman. And it had been brought to my attention, and they were looking for extras that would work for free, and I was all about jumping right on that. And so I could only attend for 2 days based on my school schedule, but I just got a lot out of it. I met Peter there. And then,
and this was, so this was before you even ever finished school.
Right, yes. I was trying to juggle everything at the same time, doing everything I could to be there as often as I could. Went to
that's one of the films that I was producer on. Just to remind everybody, that was actually the first one since launching the company and really getting out there. That was the first of the three feature films that I've been involved in the last 2 years. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Wow.
So Cameron came in and just worked as an extra, as kind of a PA in that situation?
Yeah. I was a PA, and I was an extra in two scenes on scene very briefly, which was very exciting.
Did you make the final, or were you on the cutting room floor?
Blaine, he's in not only the movie, but he's in the trailer.
Oh my God!
Yeah, man, he played an extra. He was a guy running a fruit stand in the middle of Union Square.
Yep. Threw a banana.
That's right. He threw a banana at Jezebel Montero, the lead actress.
All right. Well, I am promising the Maverick Way people, we are going to find that trailer, and we're going to put it up on the Facebook page.
Very
cool.
Much so.
Yeah. Absolutely.
All right, so let's skip ahead. So, Peter, you remembered working with Cameron, and I believe at some point Cameron had mentioned to you that he enjoyed editing and was a good editor.
Well, what happened was is that, you know, after Casanova was a Woman, you know, Cameron had definitely articulated to me that you know, he's interested in anything, and if I ever needed anyone to give him a buzz. And when I had started C Street and we were looking to hire production assistants, to help on set, I had talked to Margo Singlesias, who, you know, is Jezebel's partner with Casanova as a woman. And she had, you know, had brought up Cameron to me, and I had said to her, yeah, you know, Cameron had mentioned to me that, you know, he's always, that he's interested in doing something, you know, in continuing his work. So that was kind of how it re-rang my bell, and I had reached out to him, and we hired him to be a production assistant on C Street, and he did a great job. You know, he was with us for a little over half of the production schedule. Towards the end of the movie, when we had wrapped principal photography, me and Brett and the other producer, Ann, were really discussing our next step as far as post-production. Now, Ann Luster is very good friends with a Hollywood editor. He's a very famous editor. Lee Percy is his name. And Lee edited the Oscar-nominated film Boys Don't Cry. He's edited several other very famous Hollywood features. But Lee Percy was working on an Oliver Stone movie, okay? And we couldn't get him for the whole picture. But he agreed.
How dare him snub you for some little guy with no filmography.
So, but because of his relationship with Anne, and because he had worked with her once before and whatnot, he agreed to be he wanted to be a consultant editor. He's like, listen, I want to help you guys. I want to point you in the right direction. I think I could still give you a lot of valuable, you know, artistic input. And we were completely excited about that. Of course, it's a man of his stature. So what happened was is that we made a conscious decision that I said that, you know, we were like, let's hire an editor, you know, that would work with me to really put together a rough assembly of the movie you know, we could take it to that next level. And I had remembered Cameron had mentioned it to me towards the end of C Street in a very passing conversation, hey, I do editing, you know, and he had told me a little bit about working in New Jersey and whatnot. So I simply picked up the phone and called him and told him the situation and asked him if he had the capability to do it. And I knew that he didn't have necessarily a feature film experience, but that doesn't necessarily always mean anything. You know, if you have the talent, you have the drive, you have the desire, and the knowledge is in there. And I knew that he'd be working with me, so I knew that I could be there to kind of, you know, work with him, guide him. And ultimately, that's what happened. We took the plunge.
I actually remember this period, and Cameron, I might embarrass you a little bit, but that's, of course, one of my favorite hobbies. I remember, because you had asked Cameron for a reel, and I remember him coming to me, and he's like, what should I give him? What should I do? And yeah, he was really, really excited. And I remember being with Cameron when he put together his reel.
That's
it
great.
Got you that.
Yeah. Well, it, you know, I Cameron's reel was great. I mean, obviously, we always look for narrative, you know, or film work. But, you know, one of the things that I liked about Cameron was his characteristic. You know, I love Cameron to death, and he's a great guy. And, you know, when you're a director and you're like, okay, I got to spend the next, you know, 3 months or 2 months locked in a room with this guy, you know, and we're going to cut the movie, you know, you want to kind of vibe with somebody and you want to think that maybe, okay, does this person feel like the right person for the movie? Do they get it? Do they get what we're trying to do? Do they get what I'm trying to do as a filmmaker? And I think Cameron got all of that 110%. And, you know, he really stayed on board and kind of became our driving post-production person. So he started as just, you know, okay, we're going to hire him just to cut a rough cut. And his relationship and involvement blossomed. And Cameron's really our, I mean, I guess me and him are really arguably our post-supervisors, you know? So,
So you had mentioned earlier an assembly cut. So what is that? And kind of tell me the process that you guys go through when you're actually doing, when you've got your terabytes of data. And so what is an assembly cut? I mean, it's pretty obvious from the name of it, but how does that come together?
Well, there's so many different levels of cuts that are involved in a movie or, let's say, a TV show, any production. The assembly cut is, you know, one of the first things that happens is that you'll have an assistant editor or a team of editors, if you will, that will organize your footage. So obviously when we're shooting on set, like you said, Blaine, we have terabytes of footage, and we have this footage saved on terabytes of hard drives that are labeled and organized by the day and by the camera, you know, camera A, camera B. What we need now is we need an editor to come in and reorganize all of that workflow, as we call it, all of that footage, and it needs to be organized into the different scenes and the different shots. It needs to go from its basic organization to a more articulated organization, okay? So that has to happen first. Then that has to be assembled in the timeline. The movie has to actually now be put together. So when you're making a movie, you have a script supervisor on set, and the script supervisor has a variety of jobs. One of the jobs is they're there to record the different takes in the different scenes that I, as the director, liked. So that gets turned into a log, an editor's log that's presented to us. And we now go through that log, and the editor is supposed to say, okay, well, in scene 45, you know, the wide shot, take two of the wide shot was the best. You know, and all of those have to now be selected, organized, and now those are assembled to create the scenes. Then once the scenes are assembled, now they're put in order based on the script. You know, so now they're put in order. That's an assembly cut. All of that, that has to go on. And that was really where we started with bringing on Cameron. But of course, we wound up just, you know, Cameron and myself and just wound up banging out the whole thing. You know, we worked with Lee. Lee looked at the movie. He gave us notes that really made us look at the movie in a completely different light. That helped tremendously. And ultimately, we just kept going back and back and just keep cutting and cutting and fine-tuning until we had our product.
Cool. So, Cameron, I don't want to waste having you here. What was it like? Tell me what it was like that first day when you kind of turned into, you know, from a PA into an editor, and you got together with Peter, and, you know, tell us what was going through your mind at that moment. You've clearly never done anything like this before. What was that like?
Well, I was otherworldly excited. I was terrified and excited, very determined. So I'd been asked by Peter that, you know, do I know any editors that can take that on? And I said I would be down to do it. And I was hanging out with people at the time, and we were planning on making some doing something together. And I, like, just completely went into work mode from that moment on. It took the rest of the day. I was up all night, like, cutting together a reel and some other stuff. I wasn't entirely sure how to do it, but I had a good idea of doing it, and I've been doing a lot of editing for you and for years and since I was little, and I knew I could handle it. I had a computer that was more than powerful enough to handle it, so I just dove right in. And it all made sense, and I got to give a lot of credit to, like, the assistant cameramen, assistant directors, and everybody. Script people.
Uh-huh.
The whole team was very organized. They, mine and Peter's part, the assembly cut section that much easier because of just how well planned it was.
Mm-hmm. So what was that first day like sitting down with Peter with all of these hard drives and all this stuff? What was that like?
Managing all the hard drives and everything, it was wild, it was a lot to take into account, and I had to, everything was put on the hard drive for me initially, and then I had to sit with it for about a week and kind of label each and every shot, sync all the footage together, and that was actually, as tedious as it was, quite a fun project that wasn't too terribly hard, but it was quite an experience, just like putting together all those things, kind of assembling every scene into its own sequence before we even began editing.
So how long did this whole process from day one, where you did that week of just kind of assembling and labeling stuff and syncing things, until you had a final product, until you guys were happy with what you had?
Oh, it took a while. It basically took the entire summer. We wrapped shooting C Street at the end of May, and we got started, you know, Cameron got the drives and got officially hired at the beginning of June, and I gave him a week to just live with the drives so he could do the organizational process, and then I told him, okay, you know, you'll come here, and we'll just cut together, you know, and make our own schedule as we go along. And basically from that point on, yeah, it took the whole summer. I mean, until around September, maybe more towards October, we were finally done. Because don't forget, Blaine, in addition to what me and Cameron were doing as far as the cutting together and the graphical work that, you know, Cameron was doing for it, we also then, towards the middle of the summer, we had to now get the music started. We had a famous and extremely talented Peter Himmelman do our music. He's an Emmy Award winning composer, so we got him involved, and he had to do his
And a
process.
Minnesota boy.
Yes.
I used to listen to Peter Himmelman when I lived in Minneapolis in the late 80s and early 90s.
Is
wow.
he not? I mean, he is just an amazing, I mean, I was so
he's incredible,
excited.
Yeah.
Oh, Blaine.
Congratulations. That's really cool.
Yeah, no, he did a wonderful job, and he's a pleasure to work with. Awesome guy, brilliant talent, brilliant visionary. So we got him involved. He had to do his thing, and then we also had to get the colorist involved. There's a guy I know that I've used on my last few pictures. He's out actually in Texas, where you are. He works for a studio out there. So, you know, all these different processes, the movie had to get color graded, music had to, we also had the audio guy eventually who came in. We had an audio engineer who had to engineer the audio and mix the sound and music, which also was here in Brooklyn in a studio in Bushwick. So, you know, a lot of things had to happen. So, and all of that was happening while, you know, Cameron and me were working on continuing the post effort of the visual and assembling everything. So it definitely took the whole summer. We weren't done until the beginning of the fall. Yeah.
Okay. What is a colorist, and what does a colorist do? That sounds like a really specific job.
It definitely is. Yeah. Well, you know, when any production, a movie, a TV show, you know, it goes through grading, you know, color grading. And, you know, that's, you know, what the colorist does is, there's a variety of programs today, but everyone is pretty much working off of a program called DaVinci Resolve. And DaVinci is probably one of the number one color programs. Basically what they're doing is they're going into, you know, each frame, you know, each scene, you know, each angle, each moment, and they're balancing the colors, you know, because we work extremely hard with our lenses, our filters, and our lighting to get the best look possible when we're shooting on set. But a lot of times things are out of our control, or things don't quite match from certain angles, certain shots, or perhaps creatively we just want to do something different. So coloring and color grading gives us the opportunity to really manipulate and change the luminosity, the exposure, and the balance of the colors in each of the different scenes. So we can really make it look better. You know, we can give it a certain artistic flair, if you will, because color and grading can be artistic, you know. And then we can also fix, you know, we can also fix things. We can make things darker. We can make things brighter. And that's really what the colorist does. They work with me. You know, they get my sense as the director of what things I want to fix. You know, what problems may have arose that we want to fix digitally with the color, brightness, darkness, And then they also get a sense of creatively what I want the movie to look like. I may want the palette to be a little bit more blue, a little bit more magenta, a little bit more green. You know, it all depends, you know. Like I'll give you an example. We had one scene where we shot outside the apartment. Now, we were shooting this scene, and we emulated a street light by setting up our own light and putting color temperature orange, which is CTO filter, on a light, which made it look like a street light. It gave it that orange city glow. But what happened was is that it balanced with the actual real city light that was down the block and the color of the building, and it added an unnecessary green extra kick to it that I didn't like, that wound up being on the footage. So as the director, I communicated with the colorist. I said, listen, I want to keep the orange of the street light, the color temperature orange, but I want to add a blue, like as if like moonlight casting is there. Take away the green and make it more of a blue from moonlight. And that's what he did. He took away that unnecessary green that we didn't want, balanced it to the blue that I wanted, so it appeared like it was the moon.
Great. Cool. So we're actually a little over our hour, so we're kind of need to kind of get to wrapping up. But a little birdie told me this afternoon that C Street is going to be showing at a festival in April. Is that right?
That's correct. We are an official selection at the First Glance Film Festival in Los Angeles. The festival was rated by Time Magazine, you know, as a excellent investment and venue for independent filmmakers to be a part of. So the festival has a lot of respect, and we're definitely humbled and grateful to be a part of it. The movie, the festival takes place April 15th through the 17th. C Street will be playing during the time of the festival in Los Angeles. It's at the Regal Cinemas Live in L.A., in the city of L.A., if anybody is listening and is interested to see it, we have our Facebook page with the information. We're at Facebook, you know, Facebook C Street Movie, all the info there. Or you can simply go to First Glance's website, which is First Glance Film Festival. They have a .com where you can Google them, and all the ticket information is there. But yes, we are a part of that. We're very happy to be a part of that.
Congratulations. And are you guys going to try to get down there for that?
Absolutely. There's definitely a huge conscious effort from us to be there. Brett Lewis, who's the writer and producer, is going to be going down there. He's very excited to be there to represent the movie. I myself would like to be there to represent it. I've communicated with Cameron and one of our other producers, outline producer Ashley Vanderhorn, about them coming with me to be a part of it. So I'd like as many above the line people to be a part of it as possible. It's a great opportunity.
Awesome.
You know, this is the first time we're screening it in L.A., Blaine, so I'm excited for Los Angeles audiences to see it. You know, I want them to laugh. I want them to, you know, take something away from the movie, take the political message away, take the comedy away. I'm very excited. Very
excellent.
Excited.
Well, let's see what we can do to make that happen.
You know what's interesting, Blaine? You were talking about, you know, like, you know, locations, you know, driving a movie and whatnot. And, you know, early on, and I was just thinking about, you know, L.A. now at the festival and different things that kind of drive, you know, different things in a movie. And we were talking about C Street, you know, with Washington, D.C., and, of course, shooting in Brooklyn. And I just want to remind people that we're in a crazy political climate right now, what's going on with the GOP and the candidates that are running for president. And we definitely didn't plan that, but it happened, you know, and our movie is kind of running, our movie's running kind of adjacent to what's happening in the political climate. And I just want to remind people that, you know, there's definitely something to take away from our movie. You know, I'm not trying to get political, and, you know I mentioned this to you earlier with comedy. It allows people not to get a message right knocked over their head or be apprehensive about it. But nonetheless, you know, it exists. You know, and I think people would really dig watching this movie because of what's going on right now. You know, so, you know, based on the political climate, I think this really hits home for a lot of people. based on what's going on right now. So I recommend anybody to check out our trailer, on the website. And of course, you know, if you can, if you're out in LA or you know people out there, you know, come and see it. You know, this is worth it. You know, this is definitely worth it, you know.
Great.
Hell yeah.
All right. So, Cameron, did you have something to chime in? Did I hear you?
Said, I'm just, I'm looking forward to this festival, and we're going to get the trailer posted on our page and everything. And I don't know, I'm just really excited to see what's coming next and about the irony of the political climate as it is.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm all set.
Awesome.
Did you know that me and Cameron are trying to work on we're trying to develop a picture together? Did Cameron tell you something that I had wrote that Cameron's very interested in and is trying to develop it with me? So for any of your listeners, we're trying to develop something real quick. It's a script that I had wrote called Absconda, and it's definitely driven by location. It's very much like a Miami Vice crime drama, and it's definitely driven by Miami and driven by the location. It's a great crime drama, you know, a lot of fun, like a Miami Vice situation with exotic cars, exotic boats, and touches on terrorism, and it's a definitely a fun setting. I mean, Cameron are trying to produce that. We're definitely looking to show that to people and get it out there, so you never know, right? You never know.
Yeah, I'm super excited for that. That's going to be an exhilarating project, and it goes down to Miami, be all over New York. And we're just trying to get the ball rolling on it and keep moving forward with it. And it's going to be a hell of a film.
Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. Okay. So last thing, I asked you a question at the end of the last episode, which was what was your most terrifying time as a filmmaker, and you told me that you came up with a second story, but we ran out of time last time. So would you like to share that story with us now, Peter?
Sure. I knew it was going to circumvent back to that.
I wasn't going to let you off the hook.
Yeah, no. I figured that. Yeah, I was trying to tell you it last time, but then we went into the one thing and whatnot. Yeah, well, last time I told you about my first feature, and that was really that particular story that kind of killed me. So fast forward a couple of years later, you know, I'm out of college and everything, and I'm starting to, you know, work more professionally. And Ashley Vanderhorn, who I went to college with, who actually was the wine producer on C Street, we got an interesting job offer. It was this Japanese fella who had flown from Japan here to New York, and he was looking to develop, I believe it was either an anime or a manga that originally existed in Japan, and now he wanted to convert it into a live-action version of it. And he was looking to make it a web series. Now, according to him, web series are huge in Japan. I mean, they're becoming big here, but they're slowly getting there. So now go backwards quite a few years, they weren't really, you know, anything that you were making big money on, you know what I mean? But obviously, in another country, it's different, you know, so he had investment, and he was looking to produce this. So he hired me and Ashley, and we were the assistant directors of the project. It was a very aggressive schedule, man, because he wanted to shoot the whole first season, a 22-episode season, all in a series of a few months over the summer. And
wow.
That's a lot, man. You know, that's a very aggressive schedule. We're talking, we at least had two to maybe three dozen different locations. We had tons of extras. The cast was huge. This particular story, this manga, was a huge cast of people. So it was just like a lot. You know, the elements were massive. And it wasn't a lot of money, you know, because, you know, it was a semi-large investment, you know, that he got in Japan, but obviously with the currency difference, it wasn't a huge budget to be doing 22 episodes is what I'm trying to say. So we were definitely still in a micro indie level. So that definitely made it even more difficult. And, you know, we had some crazy events on that movie, but probably one that sticks out at me is we had this situation where we were on this boat, and I don't even know if this boat was legally allowed to sail the seas. Okay, I'm positive now, looking back, that there's no way that that was allowed to ever leave the harbor. So this boat was completely dilapidated. I mean, it was just a mess. And he set us up there, and in the second level, there was like a little kind of kitchen area and a seating area. And, you know, that's where we had holding, you know, holding meaning that's, you know, that's where we have craft services, the food, and that's where makeup and wardrobe set up. And, you know, Blaine, this boat was just disgusting, and it was just a disaster. And the weather that day was inclinedly getting worse, you know. So, you know, suffice to say that it was a nightmare, and people got, you know, deathly ill on the boat. I had to send Ashley in my vehicle. By the way, it was a huge walk to the dock, so it was like this massive walk to get back to our cars. But I had to send Ashley to, like, any pharmacy around there to get Dramamine or any type of, you know, pill, because I had lead actors that had become deathly ill that had to literally be escorted. One of them almost had to be carried, off the boat, because that's how deathly ill they became. So now imagine, you know, this day, you know, imagine the craziness of being on this boat, setting up, you know, hauling all the equipment, hauling everything, wardrobe, makeup, food.
Oh, we lost him.
Here?
Yeah, we're here. We lost him in the middle. He'll come back.
Yes.
So where are you right now, Cameron?
Right now I am in Virginia, about to cross the border into Tennessee, and
I'm back.
There we go.
Sorry. But anyway, just to finish that, you know, because I know you want to wrap up. So that's it. So we had all of that stuff, you know, maybe 40, 50 people with everything, all the equipment, all the food, and the boat was just disgusting, dilapidated, and people got deathly, deathly ill, and it just ruined and destroyed the day. And here we were running back and forth to pharmacies getting medicine for people. I mean, it was just an absolute disaster.
Yeah, and of course, the thing about Dramamine is you need to start taking it a solid 24 hours before you get on a boat. So there's not a whole lot that's going to happen.
Yeah,
anyway.
I mean, no, nobody, listen, nobody, when you're not prepared for that and those illnesses come on, you know, when you're on a boat or whatnot,
yeah,
you're done. I mean, you really are done. The best thing you can do is you have to get off the boat and just lay down, you know?
Yeah.
And ultimately that's what happened. So it just was, you know, it was really a disaster. It was really a disaster. And, you know, honestly, Blaine, that production, you know, was had a lot of those moments. Had a lot of those moments because, yeah, it had a, but, you know, when you're young, you're kind of jumping on things and you want to gain experience. And there's a lot of people out there that are producing things that don't necessarily know what they're doing, or they rush into stuff underfunded, underprepared. And it's not a good place to be when it comes to shooting stuff.
Right. But on the other hand, you're right out of school. You know, you got to take what you can take and learn, you know, learn, get your chops that way. So
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, listen, it was a good project. The longevity of it was good. Me and Ashley worked together. We definitely learned a lot of do's and don'ts, let's put it that way. But you were looking for a juicy story, and that's it, because I want you to imagine that there was actors flailing, running off the boat in pure sickness.
Oh,
so,
my God.
Yeah.
Well, I've felt that. I did a sailboat race from Newport, Rhode Island to Bermuda about 4 years ago. And we got hit with a gale about 18 hours into the race. and I was sick for 3 days. You get, you know, you get a flatlander like me who grew up in Iowa, born in Minnesota, and yeah, that was I get it. I can really envision that.
It was terrible. So you know what
awful.
It's like. You know how bad it shuts you down.
I do indeed. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah.
So all right, my friend. Well, we're gonna wrap here. You know, here we are. Maverick
like
Way Radio
let,
Hour.
Oops,
on the
sorry. On the
eve of South by Southwest, excited about that. And then you guys are going to be in L.A. What did you say, the 14th through the 17th of April?
It's going to be April 15th through April 17th. And I'd love to, if you want your show at any level, part of while we're out there. It's going to be
Oh, that'd be awesome. That would be really great.
It gets great coverage. It's a great venue. So I think your listeners can look forward to that. Maybe we can team up and do something fun with that because it's a great film festival.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Let's put that into works. All right. So Peter, let's give us your URL again, and
sure.
And then we'll wrap it for tonight.
Absolutely. You know, like we said, me and Cameron are interested to get the Abscond, the movie, off its feet. So anybody that's interested that may want to hear about it, we're looking for people to get behind it. More importantly, if people are out there and they need help producing, they need any level of production, we also can help. We talked about that earlier. If you want to take a look at any of the films or contact us regarding any of these things, it's Indelible, Indelible, Films, Films, LLC.com. So Indelible Films, LLC.com. Hit us up, check us out. We're always excited. And like I said, we're in a crazy political climate right now. So, you know, I really want people to, if they can, see C Street. I think they'll love it. I think they'll laugh, and I think they'll get something out of it.
Awesome. All right. Well, Peter Iango with Indelible Films is our guest this week. Thanks again. And, Peter, again, it was great sitting and chatting with you. We went way over our normal hour, but we were having so much fun and, you know, talking good stuff. So I really appreciate your being available for us. And definitely, let's figure out a way that maybe we can talk to you while you're down in L.A.
Absolutely. It's going to be a great festival. So we'll figure something out for your fans. They should be excited. We'll figure something out fun.
All right, man. Well, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thanks a lot.
Here, 7:30 p.m. every Wednesday is the Maverick Way Radio Hour. Thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.